calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, the I word is in the air again. Russ Feingold using it this morning on CNN. And yesterday, dancing around the edge of it with, was it yesterday, the day before, with George Stephanopoulos. Fascinating. Here, Russ Feingold, today in the United States Senate, David keeping close track on this. As soon as it happens, we'll let you know. Going to be introducing the suggestion, an article of censure against the president. Now, the last time this happened, the last time a censure was put forward, was in 1834. I mean, it was sometime back, right? 1834. And that was against Andrew Jackson. And the whole point of that back then, this is March 28th, 1834, which is kind of almost an anniversary. I mean, if it happens in the next couple of weeks, wouldn't it be ironic if it happened on March 28th? Calendar here. I don't know if March 28th is a weekday or not, or a Monday through Thursday, but in any case, Andrew Jackson had run on the campaign against Henry Clay that he was going to do away. He was going to defund the First National Bank of the United States. There was a strong sentiment that we shouldn't have a national bank, and this is an argument that went back to Hamilton and Jefferson during George Washington's presidency. But in any case, and the bank had emerged, and it was privately owned, but it was being funded by the government, and a lot of people thought that was wrong. And so Henry Jackson said, we're going to cut off their funding. And Andrew Jackson, is that what I said? I'm thinking of Scoop Jackson. President Andrew Jackson. And he ran on that against Clay in the 1832 election and won and trounced Clay. And then in the 1834 election, Clay and his party, Jackson, of course, was the Democrat, and Clay was what today would be called a Republican. I don't know if he was the tail end of the Federalists or the beginning of the Whigs, but it was right in that era. Clay, then, once he got power in the Senate, passed a censure vote to censure President Jackson, essentially over this issue, Andrew Jackson. And it was rescinded, by the way. In the following, you know, 3 years later, in the months just before he left office, as an old and rather feeble man by that point. So this has only happened once before in the history of the United States that a president that the Senate would even consider, or that actually I'm guessing that the Senate has probably considered these before. Oh, March 28th will be a Tuesday. Thank you, David, and that this could happen. Here's Russ Feingold talking about this. This on George Stephanopoulos' program. In fact, I think we set this thing up with George.
Tomorrow in the Senate, you're going to introduce a resolution to censure George W. Bush. Let me show that to our viewers and then get you to talk about it. It says, resolved that the United States Senate does hereby censure George W. Bush, President of the United States, and does condemn his unlawful authorization of wiretaps of Americans. That is a big step. Why are you taking it now?
It's an unusual step. It's a big step. But what the president did by consciously and intentionally violating the Constitution and the laws of this country with this illegal wiretapping has to be answered. There can be debate about whether the law should be changed. There can be debate about how best to fight terrorism. We all believe that there should be wiretapping in appropriate cases. But the idea that the president can just make up a law in violation of his oath of office has to be answered.
It has to be answered. At that point, George interrupted him, and they were off to the races again. So this has to be answered. We have to do something about this. It was very straightforward. And then this morning on CNN, he was talking with Soledad O'Brien, and again, the issue came up, and now he's actually starting to use the I word.
Senator have said repeatedly since we found out about this eavesdropping program in December that it wasn't legal. In fact, some of them are saying, well, it's illegal, so let's make it legal. What does that tell you? That means they're admitting the president broke the law of the United States of America. Now, their answer is just to scream and say it's political to point that out. But it's not political. These are the very same people that went after President Clinton saying he broke the law. I want to tell you something. This is a lot more serious, a lot more like an impeachable offense than anything President Clinton ever did.
Yeah, well said. Russ Feingold, and I have a feeling all over America there are people rushing to find Russ Feingold's website so they can send him campaign contributions. This guy, by the way, is the only one among all the various serious Democratic candidates running for office Well, I shouldn't say the only. Well, he's the only one who has consistently stood on the side of American small businesses, medium-sized companies, American manufacturers, and American workers in opposing so-called free trade, which is, you know, free for big multinational corporations and not so free for all the rest of us. And John Edwards is the other guy who has a somewhat mixed record in this, but by and large has been on the side of American workers. None of the other candidates can make that claim. And you've got some folks out there, you know, Evan Bayh and whatnot, who just, you know, they're so-called free traders over the top. They're completely in the pockets of big multinational corporations, and tragically so. Russ Feingold again on CNN this morning talking about this issue.
I think what we've done for 3 months is I'm on both the Intelligence Committee and the Judiciary Committee. We've listened and listened. We've not heard any persuasive argument at all that the president had legal authority to do that. Would it be a good thing for the country now to start an impeachment proceeding? I'm not so sure. I think that's something we ought to think about. Do we really want to remove this president from office because of this? Or do we want to send a clear signal by a censure resolution that what he did was wrong?
But you know,
we don't do something to pass a resolution. What we're saying is, Mr. President, just make up whatever law you want, whenever you want. This is a way to restore the constitutional order on a bipartisan basis and allow us to get back to the main issue, which is fighting the war against Al-Qaeda and terrorism.
But, you know,
interesting. And that point, you know, no, you can't say that. What? You can't say that. And, in fact, that's exactly what Bill Frist had to say. I mean, Bill Frist just absolutely went hysterical on this. And this is like, you know, what do you do when you can't just beat people up with 9/11? You can't just yell, oh, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, because it's getting kind of old now, right? I mean, maybe it worked for a while. You know, George W. Bush, for example.
My fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
And then he pulls out 9/11 and tries to mix it up with Iraq. You know, this worked so well for Bush for a couple of years.
The Battle of Iraq is one victory in a war on terror that began on September the 11th, 2001.
Yeah, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, right? Well, it doesn't work anymore. And so what are they saying now? They're saying, how dare you criticize the president? They're listening in Iran. What kind of message does that send? Now, just consider this for a moment. We are trying to say to Iran, we are trying to say to the citizens of Iran, you want to have democracy. You should overthrow those mullahs who are stifling your country. Democracy would be a good thing. And what is democracy? Democracy involves free speech. Democracy involves challenging your leaders. Democracy involves a political give and take. So, you know, I could understand where, you know, a communist state, for example, you know, the communist Chinese would say to a commentator or to a politician, well, how dare you speak out? This is a communist state. We're all supposed to march in lockstep. We're all supposed to say the same thing. But see, in a democracy, you're supposed to speak out. And so here's Bill Frist apparently advocating communism or tyranny. You make up your own mind.
Well, George, this is the first I've heard about it. I really am surprised about it because Russ is just wrong. I mean, he is flat wrong. He is dead wrong. And as I was listening to it, I was hoping deep inside that the leadership in Iran and the other people who really have the U.S. not in their best interest are not listening because of the terrible signal it sends.
Yes, a terrible signal. It sends the signal that in America, we consider democracy to be really seriously important. It's a big deal to us. Democracy is important to us in the United States. And that's just a signal that you don't want to send to the rest of the world. You get this? Do you get this? I mean, this is probably the most outrageous statement.
I was hoping deep inside that the leadership in Iran and other people who really have the U.S. not in their best interest are not listening because of the terrible signal it sends.
Bill Frist saying that democratic debate, that Americans standing up and speaking out on behalf of the Constitution, when the Constitution was involved, speaking out on behalf of the rule of law. What Russ Feingold is saying is that the president should be censured Not because he had an extramarital affair, not because he employed so many incompetent people, not because he screwed up the economy, not because he has a weird ideology with regard to economics or gay marriage or whatever it may be. No, that he should be censured because he broke the law. It's about the rule of law. Do we or do we not respect the rule of law in the United States? And here you've got Bill Frist saying, when somebody stands up and says, if you break the law, you should be censured, that sends a terrible message. I'm boggled. I'm boggled that Bill Frist would say that. It is so revealing of the Republican love of aristocracy, oligarchy, kleptocracy, and ultimately tyranny. 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
He took all the trees and put them in a tree museum. And charge the people a dollar and a half to see them. No, 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 don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone. It'd be a paradise and put up a fucking line.
Boy, I think this is how so many Americans are sitting around. We had no idea how, you know, what democracy was all about until we started losing it at the hands of the Bush administration. Even Republicans now standing up and saying no. You've got the judge in this Mousavi trial saying no. The Mousavi trial was just suspended. The judge saying that this was an absolute outrage, the second major outrage she's talking about that happened in this trial as a consequence of the administration, the Bush administration, lawyers for the Bush administration just going absolutely over the top. An angry federal judge unexpectedly recessed the death penalty trial of confessed al-Qaeda conspirator Zacharias Moussaoui. She says, this is the second significant error by the government affecting the constitutional rights of the defendant and the criminal justice system in this country in the context of a death case. She said, in all my years I've been on the bench, I've never seen such an egregious violation of a rule on witnesses. Yeah, well, you know, the Bushies, they don't believe in constitutional rights. You got to just have to understand, you know, what's really going on here. It's, constitutional rights? We don't believe in that. By the way, our quote for the day, Republicans are men of narrow vision who are afraid of the future. Our quote for the day from President Jimmy Carter. President Jimmy Carter, indeed. And a conservative Twilight Zone alert. This is actually for conservatives. They will no doubt think that they've stepped into the Twilight Zone when they hear this story. Holland launches immigrant quiz. Yes, if you want to immigrate into Holland. Well, here, I'll just read the story straight up. This is from the Sunday Times. Nicola Smith reporting from Amsterdam. Two men kissing in a park and a topless woman bather are featured in a film that will be shown to would-be immigrants to the Netherlands. The reaction of applicants, including Muslims, will be examined to see whether they are able to accept the country's liberal attitudes. Those sitting the test will be expected to identify William of Orange and to know which country Crown Princess Maxima comes from, it's Argentina, and whether hitting women and whether female circumcision are permitted in Holland. Muslim leaders in Holland say the film is offensive. It really is a propagation aimed to limit immigration. It has nothing to do with the rights of homosexuals, says Abnou Benabi, a Moroccan-born director of MSEMO, an organization that helps immigrants settle. Famil Arslan, 34, an immigration lawyer of Turkish origin, says, I've lived here 30 years, and I've never been witness to two men kissing in a park. So why are they confronting people with that? Well, to that, I'd say, I've only been in Holland, I don't know, 10, 15 times in my life, and I've seen men kissing men and women kissing women in public places probably a dozen times. And I don't even live there. I mean, in Holland I've seen this. Anyhow, the new test, the first of its kind in the world, marks another step in the transformation of Holland from one of Europe's most liberal countries to one cracking down the hardest on immigration. This, in large part, I think, because of the murder of Theo van Gogh, who made a film in 2002 about the oppression of women in Muslim communities, and in 2004 was murdered for it. So now they're going to have, you know, they're going to confront people and say, you know, this is like, this is the society that you're moving to. Can you put up with it? And if they can't, off they go. Don't get in. And they're also requiring them to learn Dutch. The tests are going to be given in Dutch, and so they have to speak Dutch before they can apply for immigration, which brings up the whole discussion of, you know, should English be the official language of the United States? Which, you know, oddly, I don't think that this is a conservative or liberal issue. And I say this speaking as somebody who lived in Germany and had to learn how to speak German. Und jetzt ich kann ein bisschen Deutsch sprechen. And you know, I've worked in other countries where I had to learn to speak a little bit of those languages. And so I've got this kind of a little bit of Swahili and a little bit of Japanese and a little bit of Spanish and very little bit and so on. But French, I guess, is the only one. I never lived in France. Had a guy, one time I asked a guy at a street corner for directions in Paris. This is like 20 years ago. Louise and I were lost. We were three blocks from our hotel. We didn't know where we were. Came up to this very well-dressed Frenchman and said, excuse me, sir, can you tell me where the train station is, the Gare du Sud? And he stands there for a moment. He looks at me and he finally says, parlez-vous de français? And I said, non. I said, I'm sorry. Ich kann Deutsch sprechen. And he looks at me and he goes, and then he goes, what, two, like that, spits on my shoes, right on my shoes, and then turns around and walks off. And I'm standing there with his spit on my shoes going, whoa, welcome to France. It was an amazing experience. But anyhow, the point is that a lot of countries say, hey, you want to live in our country? Speak our language. It has something to do with our culture. And that was something I really learned when I lived in Germany, was that the language and the culture are intertwined. Culture, in many ways, is defined by language, and in many ways, language helps define the culture. For example, a lot of cultures have language, German, French, Spanish, for example. Cultures have languages that contain, you know, gender-specific nouns. And, you know, what impact does that have on culture? And how does that change over time? It's just so, in any case, I'm personally inclined to think that people shouldn't speak English if they're going to live in the United States. I don't know if that's politically correct to say on the left or not, but it's, you know, just from observing the world, I think it makes sense. So the Dutch are saying, got to speak Dutch if you're going to come to Holland, and you got to put up with men kissing men and topless women sunbathing. And if you can't, don't come. We'll be back with your calls right after this, 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
What's the world coming to? What they say isn't true. You can't plant no seed where there's only three.
And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The radio support group of, by, and for we the people of the United States of America. And Russ Feingold just laying it out, coming right out and saying, you know, this is it. He's going to introduce this resolution, and there's a good reason for it. Here's, again, George Stephanopoulos setting this thing up for Russ Feingold, and then he knocks it out. And let's pot it up.
Tomorrow in the Senate, you're going to introduce a resolution to censure George W. Bush. Let me show that to our viewers and then get you to talk about it. It says, resolved that the United States Senate does hereby censure George W. Bush, President of the United States, and does condemn his unlawful authorization of wiretaps of Americans. That is a big step. Why are you taking it now?
It's an unusual step. It's a big step. But what the president did by consciously and intentionally violating the Constitution and the laws of this country with this illegal wiretapping has to be answered. There can be debate about whether the law should be changed. There can be debate about how best to fight terrorism. We all believe that there should be wiretapping in appropriate cases. But the idea that the president can just make up a law in violation of his oath of office has to be answered.
Has to be answered. And he got chopped off there because George stepped on him, and so we cut the clip at that point. But anyhow, it has to be answered. Has to be answered. I agree. And I think it would be great. Of course, Bill Frist is not going to allow this to the floor of the Senate. And, of course, in a Republican-controlled Senate, it won't pass. But the word is out. It's in the air. This president is so corrupt. And this is we're seeing this thing being played out. I mean, think back to Giuliani. And those of you who are New Yorkers, I'd love to get your take on this because you were right there at ground zero living through this, and I'm on the other side of the country here. But my recollection, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but my recollection is that Giuliani was running for re-election. He had a relatively strong Democratic guy going up against, you know, Democrat going up against him. And as a Republican, his biggest liability was the fact that he was a Bush Republican. And so just a few weeks before the election, there's this terror alert in the subways. And then the Bush administration comes out and says, oh, no, our mistake, no terror alert. And, oh, I'm saying Giuliani, Bloomberg. I'm talking about Bloomberg here. And so Bloomberg steps up and he says, no, we're going to ignore what the Bush administration says, and we're going to take this thing seriously because I am going to defy the president. And all of a sudden, Democrats are jumping ship going, oh, Bloomberg is standing up to the president. Bloomberg is saying that Bush isn't keeping us safe, and he's going to. And he wins the election. Is this the great strategy for Democrats in the coming elections of 2006 to defy the president? I think so. I think that's what this whole Ports deal was all about, was creating distance between the president and members of Congress. And I think that the president and Karl Rove organized it this way specifically because they want to be sure that Republicans hold on to the Senate and the House of Representatives, because Karl Rove doesn't want to go to prison and George W. Bush doesn't want to get impeached. And they both know that if they lose the House and the Senate, both those things will in all probability happen. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, 440-THOM, David in Fort Meade, Florida. Hey, David, welcome to the program. David in Fort Meade, Florida. David, I'm going to put you on hold. We'll come back to you. You got to listen to the telephone, not the radio. David in Blaine, Washington. Hey, David.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, will anybody pull Bill Frist's feeding tube ASAP?
Yeah, right.
And I think Gore, if he decides to run, and Feingold would be a perfect team, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I am so impressed by Al Gore and by Russ Feingold, or Edwards and Feingold, or Feingold and Edwards, or Feingold and Gore, although my guess is Feingold is going to have to be the number two guy on the ticket if it's either Gore or Edwards. Because
Gore has a lot of experience, and plus how he's come around since 2000. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And renounce
Joe Lieberman.
Oh, gag me. No,
yeah, I know.
No, let's don't go there. Really quick, did you happen to catch the article by Sandra Day O'Connor?
I didn't know that she'd written an article. I read the transcript of Dina Totenberg's reporting on the speech that she gave.
Right.
In fact, we did it on this program on Friday. And she basically said, we're descending into tyranny, that this is the characteristic, what the Bush administration is doing. I'm not quoting her right now. This is paraphrasing wildly. But essentially she said what the Bush administration is doing is what governments that are no longer democratic do.
Exactly. And some of the comments that they've made, like Tom DeLay and Frist, specifically toward judges, just labeling all of them activist judges just because mm-hmm. of some of the decisions that they've made to try to politicize the whole thing and minimizing some of the judges that were murdered for some of the decisions that were made last year.
Yeah.
So anyways, I just wanted to share that with you.
Well, thank you, David. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. And that Sandra Day O'Connor just coming right out and blasting these guys. And she's a Republican who was appointed by a Republican. Joe in Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Yeah, well, like I've said before, Russell Feingold is the only Democrat out there that's even worth considering for president. And it's good to see finally someone is doing that in the United States Senate and a presidential candidate following John Conyers' lead.
Yeah.
This is a very positive development. And actually, one other.
John Conyers' lead. Oh, John Conyers in the House of Representatives. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. There's like Russell Feingold is the only presidential candidate person in the Senate that's been falling asleep.
Right. For our listeners who don't know the connection, John Conyers, back, what, 3 months ago now? It's been a while. Introduced a House resolution, as I recall, it's 635 or 653, one or the other. That is a resolution to launch an investigation, an investigation or inquiry into the behavior of the Bush administration that could lead to the impeachment of George W. Bush, specifically.
Yeah, and speaking of fascism, I wanted to mention a movie by Aaron Russo that screened in Portland yesterday called America from Freedom to Fascism, and it had a lot to say about the Federal Reserve and the IRS and the national ID card, about basically how a lot of our freedoms are being taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron Russo, you know, in case people don't know, ran for president as a libertarian, used to be Bette Midler's manager, and this movie will be screening in Chicago and Ann Arbor, Michigan this next weekend. Mm-hmm. So I think people should check it out.
Is it still playing in Portland, Joe?
What's that?
Is it still playing in Portland?
Oh, no, actually it screened yesterday, but I think they have a screening up in Spokane, Washington tonight.
So these are just one-day events?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a shame. I missed it. I would have liked to have seen it.
Well, Joe, I think you should interview him.
Yeah, I'll check it out. And the name of the movie again, Joe, was?
America from Freedom to Fascism. It's
great.
Very good. It's also very funny, too.
Yeah. Okay, we'll check it out. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Charles in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, Charles.
Hey.
What's up?
Good to hear from you, Tom. I just wanted to kind of bring something to everyone's attention. This whole thing with the impeachment and the censure is basically setting America up to for a backlash, you know, and for the Democrats to take back over, which would be a good thing.
It could be. I mean, the backlash word is the word that the Democrats are afraid of, because there was a strong backlash against the Republicans when they impeached Bill Clinton, and you've got the Democratic spinmeisters, the Democratic pundits, the consultants, you know, the Bob Shrums of the world, saying to the Democrats in Congress, don't impeach George W. Bush, because if you do, then America will get upset, because look at how upset they were when Clinton got impeached. And I'd say the difference is Clinton didn't commit a crime that had to do with the governance of this nation. You know, he committed.
I agree completely.
You know, and wiretapping American citizens is not just a crime; it's a violation of his oath of office. The oath of office said he would uphold the Constitution. And
absolutely.
You know, I'm sorry, having sex outside your marriage has nothing to do with upholding the Constitution or not upholding the Constitution. But
absolutely.
Illegally wiretapping Americans is a clear violation. If that's not a high crime and misdemeanor, I don't know what is.
I completely agree. But the problem I see is that. We're being set up, you know, for the Democrats to take back over, including the executive branch. But the thing I don't want to happen is for Hillary Clinton to end up in the White House. Because if we do, it's just going to be a continuation of that 25 years that you were speaking of earlier with the whole oligarchy situation.
The dynasties, yeah, the reciprocal dynasties. Yeah, I've got to say, Charles. If Hillary is the Democratic candidate, I will vote for her at least at this moment. You know, given what I know right now, she's just not my favorite candidate. I absolutely understand what you're saying. In fact, I've said the same thing myself. So we'll have to see how it plays out. David in Fort Meade, Florida. Hey, David, we have about a half a minute left. What's on your mind?
Hi, good day.
Hi.
You gave a part of a talk, part of a speech last week on the Founding Fathers.
Yeah.
It was so well done.
Well, thank you.
One of the finest things I've heard in a decade.
Well, thank you. Quoting from my own book. That's from my book, What Would Jefferson Do?
I didn't get the name of it. What is it?
What Would Jefferson Do?
And is it in print?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Random House published it. It should be
I'll
in any
bookstore. I'll pick it up today. By the way,
any
on
bookstore.
The same topic,
yeah.
I noticed that Regnery Press is into their act. Of course, you realize.
Yeah, it's a great process.
Hog riot.
Yeah,
they had a book on the Founding Fathers claiming that they were all conservative in nature.
Oh, that's right. Regnery Press is the right wing press. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. 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 If you believe that, David, I got a bridge to sell you that the founders were all conservatives. But yeah, you're absolutely right. They're all trying to rewrite history. 45 minutes past the hour. Thanks, David, for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I was- burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail, hunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
And welcome back, my friends. Yeah, we could all use some shelter from the storm, I think, these days. It's getting stranger and stranger out there.
Just a push of a button, just a touch of a screen.
And it's time for a voting machine alert.
Welcome to the future. Come try our voting machine.
Yeah, ES&S is saying that the failure of dozens of computer memory cards in their computer, touchscreen voting systems. Excuse me, these are not even the touchscreens. These are the systems that scan printed ballots. Are because of dead batteries. Dead batteries, that's what ES&S officials are saying, is to blame for the failure of dozens of computer memory cards in Summit County's new optical scan voting system. What we're dealing with is a portion of one batch of cards sent in recent weeks that have an issue with low batteries, ES&S spokeswoman Ellen Bogart said Friday. They said the new voting equipment, but the memory cards were made by Viking, a Long Grove, Illinois company, and Viking didn't return calls, and the memory cards failed to work as often as 30% of the time. Now, I would guess that means that your vote didn't get counted. I mean, if the votes are being counted on a memory card, then Bogart said there is a large battery and a smaller backup battery in each card. She said Viking has agreed to replace the cards free of charge for ES&S and its customers. Are they going to replace our votes? Don't know. Well, actually, I guess they're getting ready for the May 2nd primary here with this new optical scan system that's going to replace punch card voting. Again, I have to ask the question, why are we allowing private corporations, private for-profit corporations, to stand between us and our vote on the one hand and the government which we are voting to control on the other? There should not be a private corporation standing in the middle of that. Privatizing the vote is the most corrupt, criminal, and wrong-headed thing that has been done by this government in the last 50 or 100 years, in my opinion. Judy in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Judy, welcome to the program. Thanks for listening to WPTT. Judy?
Well, hello.
Hey, Judy.
I can hardly hear you. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
I'm calling about a gathering of Republicans to nominate a candidate for presidency. This was on Friday night. Hardball had, that was Chris Matthews, Hardball.
Right, where he kept saying, in fact, all week in the promos, in fact, he was saying, where the Republicans were gathering to select the next president of the United States. And if
yes,
that's not
exactly
a subliminal...
I love that, I really love that.
You know, what a subliminal suggestion. I mean,
exactly.
I must have heard him say it a dozen times. His brother is a Republican, you know, he's running for Republican elected office, and something like, Secretary of State or something in Virginia, something like one of those positions in Virginia or Maryland, but in any case.
Well, I don't know whether you heard Bill Frist. He was being interviewed by Chris Matthews, showed a film, I guess it was, of Judge O'Connor. She was speaking to a group of people, and she said, America has to be aware that we are headed for a dictatorship. And then it just came back to the grouping again of the Republicans, and he asked Bill Frist what he thought about that. He said, she has, that's nothing to worry about. Who's going to pay any attention to her? She's not even a judge now.
Wow.
And I think what happened is I have a feeling that she actually retired so that she could bring this message out to the people. And
yeah. Well, she could have done that from the bench.
But it hasn't even been mentioned anywhere. Newspapers,
yeah.
Radio, TV, nowhere.
Yeah. Well, actually, NPR reported it, and that's how I learned about it, was Nina Totenberg did a very in-depth analysis of it, and it's been reported. So, you still there, Judy?
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. We don't have a good connection. I'm very sorry about that.
Okay, yeah, maybe Alex needs to pop me up on the board or something, but it was reported on NPR. Beyond that, I didn't see it reported any place, which I think is a tragedy.
Yes, it is, because, you know, I was wishing that would be front page news, at least.
Yeah.
But, not one word about it. But I thought maybe you could spread that message.
Yeah, well, I have. And we talked about it last Friday, too, when it first came up. Judy, got to move along. Thank you for the call. Great to hear from you. Scott in Indianapolis, Indiana on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi. It was easy to get through. I just wanted to ask you to explain again your views on the so-called social contract. From my perspective, it seems to go against everything that I believe in, which is the rights of the individual and not the idea that the group can vote to take away individual rights or force the individual to participate in a contract that he doesn't want to participate in.
Well, Scott, it's really simple. If you don't want to participate in the social contract that we call the United States of America, you can go somewhere else.
You mean America, love it or leave it?
Yeah, I mean, literally. I mean, that's any other country you go to, by the way, is going to say the same thing to you. You're drinking our pure water, which came about because somebody forced somebody to pay tax dollars for it. You're using our public roads. You're stopping at a stoplight that is being, you know, the traffic is being kept regulated by police officers that are, you know, the taxes that are being taken. This is the social contract. You were probably educated in a public school that was paid for with tax dollars that were taken at the barrel of a gun, threat of force, to use your terminology. That's the social contract. And, well, you know, if you don't want to live in a country that has a social contract, go buy an island.
That's a good emotional way of looking at it.
No, it's a literal way of looking at it. Those people who say that they don't want to follow the social conventions, they don't want to go along with the social contract, are essentially saying they don't want to pay their share. It's a infantile, childish, selfish way of approaching it.
No, I believe in paying for services that I want. What I don't believe in is not being given choice. You say public or government.
Oop, we lost Scott. Scott, I'm sorry. I did not dump you. I think Alberto Gonzalez is in our board sometimes. It's 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no!
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
The good citizens of North Carolina once again leading the way. Air Force Academy graduate and former Winston-Salem City Councilman Vernon Robertson filed paperwork to the State Board of Elections and is now a candidate for Congress in North Carolina's 13th district, stretching from Greensboro to Raleigh. He's going after Brad Miller, three-term incumbent. He says Miller's ultra-liberal voting record makes him ripe for defeat. And, in fact, he's running an ad in which I think he's been listening to this program. He's stolen our conservative alert, our Twilight Zone. He's you know... But here's this ad for Vernon Robertson, a conservative African-American running for the United States House of Representatives from the 13th District in North Carolina.
If you're a conservative Republican, watching the news these days can make you feel as though you are in the Twilight Zone. Americans are under attack from Islamic extremists in every corner of the world. Homosexuals are mocking holy matrimony, and the lesbians and feminists are attacking everything sacred. Liberal judges have completely rewritten the Constitution. You can burn the American flag and kill a million babies a year, but you can't post the Ten Commandments or say God in public. Seven out of every 10 black children are born out of wedlock, and Jackson and Sharpton claim the answer is racial quotas. And the aliens are here, but they didn't come in a spaceship. They came across our unguarded Mexican border by the millions.
I'm Vernon Robinson. If you send me to Congress, I'll send that back to the Twilight Zone. I approve of this message and of traditional American values.
Hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting. And they, you know, what's particularly interesting is they end with that little Mr. Ed clip there. It makes me wonder if this guy has been hanging out with our old friend. What's his name? Do you know David? Do you remember? That's it. The fellow who was on. He was on with. Anyway, I'm. We'll come back to that. Well, I've got to track it down. David in Eureka, California. Hey, David, thanks for calling the program.
Hey, Tom. I know that you know that time is running out for us to be able to do something to prevent yet another election fraud. It occupies so much of my thinking. We need to have candidates that will not politely concede to any election fraud. I think that's one thing. They've got to be structured on that. And where they have these machines, we need to set up some kind of an alternative, a secondary system that they can vote on that we can compare if the machines are being inaccurate. We also need to make sure that we have in place credible exit polls that can be used if we have to go litigate. Because I see it coming down, and if they pull it again, I see them targeting such programs as your own. They'll try to shut down all voices that oppose them.
Mm, yeah. Well, we'll see, Dave. We're here. We're still here.
Yeah, but don't...
We're still alive, and we're growing.
Will we survive another election fraud?
I think that American democracy is far more resilient than our fears would indicate. And I think the fact that we're still here and we're still talking about these things is one of the proofs of it. The fact that Russ Feingold is out there talking about impeachment and introducing today a resolution of censure against George W. Bush into the United States Senate. I think these are all good, strong indicators that there is hope and that there's a lot of hope.
We need a few more Feingolds. My dear friend Alice had asked of you, and you, I think, pretty much said you were going to try to, every congressman you interview, get them to take this voting fraud as a top priority.
Yeah. Well, I speak with many of them about it very frequently, and it's an issue that you know that I write about regularly, too.
I know. That,
David, finish your sentence.
Thank you, bro.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dave. Great to hear from you. It was Neil Horsley. How could I have forgotten? Good, Mr. Ed. I mean, Horse, of course. Neil Horsley, the guy who was the big leader in the anti-abortion movement, who runs the website where they show the pictures of the abortion doctors and tell where their addresses are. And whenever one gets murdered, they put a big X through the picture. Neil Horsley, who was on Alan Colmes' radio show, and kind of confessing to what these anti-abortion right-wing wackos are really all about.
You are known for your anti-abortion and anti-homosexual views. You had sex with animals?
When you grow up on a farm in Georgia, your first girlfriend is a mule.
I'm not so sure that is so.
You didn't grow up on a farm in Georgia. Did you?
Are you suggesting that everybody who grows up on a farm in Georgia has a mule as a girlfriend?
I'm saying that it has historically been the case. You people are so far removed from the...
Look, I'll admit, Neil, I'm a city boy. I don't know a lot about growing up on a farm.
Well, welcome to domestic life on the farm.
But I think for you to say...
Welcome to domestic life.
There are a lot of people listening to you right... Neil, there are a lot of people listening to me right now who live on farms, are raising kids on farms, who grew up on farms, and I don't think they're dating Elsie right now. You know what I'm saying?
The fact of the matter is, don't know that, in fact, you experiment with anything that moves when you're growing up sexually, you're naive, and you know better than that. You know yourself. If it's warm and if it's damp and it vibrates, you might, in fact, have sex with it.
No, not me.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes,
no,
you know,
thanks.
Come on, you know. I've had sex with anything that would move.
Right.
If we had a warm watermelon out in the field, I might give it a name.
Hello, I'm Mr. Ray.
So it's interesting that the conservative Vernon Robinson is also using the Mr. Ed theme there at the end. Maybe he listens to this show regularly. Knocked off two of our show elements. Who knows? Teresa in Shelburne, Vermont. Hey, Teresa, welcome to the program.
Well, I want to thank you. First of all, I want to thank you, Tom, and all the Air America people, because you guys are forming a lifeline for us.
Well, thank you.
It feels real good. Anyhow, I was speaking to your screener, and I was just telling him that Rich Tarrant up here is running some pretty smooth commercials and has been for, I would guess, almost a month.
Well, an anti-Bernie Sanders spots you're talking about?
I haven't seen any Bernie Sanders spots so far.
No, I mean, Rich is the guy who's running against Bernie.
Rich,
right?
Tarrant is the wealthy businessman who is running against Bernie, who has never, so far as I know, ever held office.
Right, although he may be the richest man in the state.
Oh, I don't know. I'm guessing he is. I don't know that that's even a contest.
I believe Bernie has said that before.
Well, he's got a lot of money to throw at this election, and the commercials are like watching West Wing.
Oh, really?
They're really well done.
Oh.
And I watch them, and I think Bernie is probably going to win the race, but I don't think it's a shoo-in like I used to think.
Yeah.
And I...
Well, this guy, Rich Tarrant, has said that he's going to put $5 million of his own money into this thing. I mean, you know, $5 million to buy a Senate race in a state that only has 600,000 people in it, that's a lot of money.
But it's cheap at the price.
Well, it's cheap compared to California, where it can cost $40-50 million. But and typically across the United States, the average is around $5.5 to $6 million for a Senate race. But it's I would be amazed if Pat Leahy or Jim Jeffords had ever spent that much money.
Oh no! Well, I mean, you were probably here when Pat Leahy got a give the a couple years back with the little farmer from Tunbridge.
Oh yeah. And they traveled around the state, cookies with Pat and whatever. What was his name?
Fred.
Yeah, Fred. That's right. Fred Tuttle. Cookies with Pat and Fred.
What a give he got. And even the last election wasn't much to speak of. And Barack Obama was just here last week.
Mm-hmm.
So we are,
a fundraiser for Bernie.
For Bernie and Peter Welch, who's running for Bernie's seat. So we have some support, but it is interesting, that there is that much money up here and that people are trying to buy the election. I also wanted to comment, I did tell your screener, and I think you probably already know this, but Keith Olbermann led with the Sandra Day O'Connor story on Friday night.
Oh, that's great. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I mean, I watch him all the time because I
did
really...
Did he have video of her speaking?
You see, that's what your screener asked me, and I don't know. You kind of see it, but I don't remember. I saw a picture of her, but I don't know if it was a live picture. It was they just put a picture of her up, but he didn't lead with the whole concept that she said that...
I understood that there was no video, and in fact that there was no actually audio of her. I was surprised when one of our callers said that there was a video clip of it, because that was not consistent with my recollection. But in any case, the reality is that here you have out there Sandra Day O'Connor, a former Supreme Court justice. I mean, mm-hmm. It doesn't you don't get higher than that.
I know.
You don't get more credible than that. A lifelong Republican, appointed by a Republican to the Supreme Court, and really in her decisions on the Supreme Court, yes, she voted to uphold Roe v. Wade, although she did go along with some restrictions on it. But by and large, she was no liberal.
Yeah. No.
No, she was.
A lot of us didn't like her when she first got there, and accepted her grudgingly. And she, I think she became more moderate as she went along. But yeah, for her to say such a thing, it's what my comment to my husband that night was. Well, why didn't she just stay on the court?
Yeah. Well, because her husband has Alzheimer's, and she said she wanted to spend the last good year with him, and I believe her. But, Teresa, thank you very much for the call. I'm sorry we're out of time here. We're going to take a break. It's 16 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Why does the sun go on shining? Why does the sea rush to shore? Don't they know it's the end of the world? 'Cause you don't love me anymore.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. We're going to be back with your calls right after this. Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much. Today, Howard Dean, who's chair of the Democratic National Committee, made a pretty radical speech at the Communications Workers of America. He said that... President Bush and Karl Rove want to bring the U.S. back into the McKinley era, where their gap between rich and poor was the largest. said if you want capitalism to work, then everyone has to benefit, and Bush's spreading of democracy doesn't work because it's for globalization only, for the benefit of large companies. He also said in terms of the elections that the Democrats do have a platform of honesty, strong national defense, and they want American jobs to stay in America, a health care system where everybody benefits. He said the Bush administration is the most fiscally irresponsible administration in history. Said that they need leadership with vision, and Americans are ready for a real change.
It's interesting he would mention the McKinley administration, because Karl Rove is on record as having said that he models himself after Mark Hanna. Mark Hanna was McKinley's political operative, his right-hand man, the guy who basically made him, and also the guy who advised him to claim that the USS Maine had sunk because it was attacked, and thus initiate the Spanish-American War.
Well,
in order to get reelected.
Right. Well, interesting. So Howard Dean gave, I would say for Howard Dean, quite a speech today. Also at the White House, the president is giving a speech this afternoon on Iraq. This is part of his speeches on Iraq. And, of course, we're looking at the third anniversary on the 19th of March. And he's expected to make several speeches to try and get his poll numbers up before the third anniversary of the Iraq War.
So here over the weekend we had Russ Feingold, and then this morning again on CNN News, talking about his motion of censure that he's putting forward before the Senate today, and this morning on CNN actually using the word impeachment on several occasions, and saying that what Bush has done in violating the Constitution, breaking the law, is a much more serious offense, a much more impeachable offense than anything that Bill Clinton did. Is that getting much play in the mainstream media, Ellen?
Well, no. I mean, other than what you've heard and I've heard on television, no. I mean, the radio people are having a field day with it, the right-wingers, saying that this is just another example of, how out of touch the American Democratic Party is.
Well, that's great. I'm glad that they're playing it rather than ignoring it, because
they're making fun of it.
Yeah, because a lot of their listeners are going to go, maybe this Feingold guy is saying something. I mean, he's my candidate for president.
Well, as I said, he's sort of running the Dennis Kucinich type of candidacy. The other thing that's happening is that, as you know, there was this whole issue with Claude Allen, who was the policy advisor. He was caught essentially not shoplifting, but doing an exchange at Target and a local department store, Hex, here in Washington, and he had resigned the first week in February, telling the administration about a few weeks before that there had been a big mistake. The administration is just trying to review the timeline, but it looks as if Claude Allen was in some financial problems at this time that this went on.
Interesting. But before that, he was the administration's point man on abstinence only. He was the guy who was running around saying condoms are unreliable. He's the guy who was in charge of checking out rallies and things where people had spoken out against the president or against the president's policies, and identifying people there so that they could be singled out for persecution. I mean, this guy was a very, very toxic Republican hitman, basically.
Very much so, very much so. One last sort of interesting thing today, and that is that there is this whole question of the supplemental. And as you know, Victoria reported on this last week that General Peter Pace who's head chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had basically been pushed and pushed as to whether any of the supplemental money was going to go to attack Iran by Senator Byrd of West Virginia.
Right.
He answered, no, sir. And today the White House would not respond one way or the other except to say, well, that was answered by General Pace.
So the question, are you going to attack Iran, prior to today was no. And the answer, are you going to attack Iran now, is...
That was answered.
Yeah. Let somebody else... Do you see a pattern here? I mean, back in 2002, the Republicans wanted to take the Senate back, and they wanted to grab more House seats, and so they started ginning up a war. They didn't actually have the war before November. They just ginned it up. They used... September, they waited until summer was over because you don't roll out a new product during the summer. And in September and October, they were pushing through all these votes about, to hold Saddam accountable in the United Nations, et cetera, et cetera. Do you see it? This, it just seems to me like this cycle is happening all over again.
I think that this is exactly what's happening all over again, and I think we're going to see it with Iran, and I think that the only way this president can maintain any kind of control or legitimacy is to either say, all those guys are still bad guys, we're winning in Iraq, and or start something new.
Yeah, be afraid, be very afraid. That's his mantra.
Exactly.
Ellen Reiner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Conservative, welcome back, my friends, to the pill that will help you escape the matrix. The Tom Hartman radio program, 34 minutes past the hour. And time now for a fascism alert introduced to you by Rudolf Hess. Yes, the Associated Press obtained a draft copy of new legislation being proposed by Senator Mike DeWine, the Republican from Ohio, which could be introduced as soon as this week. The draft would add to the criminal penalties for anyone who, quote, intentionally discloses information identifying or describing, end quote, the Bush administration's terrorist surveillance program or any other eavesdropping program conducted under a 1978 surveillance law. This, a bill that would cause reporters who expose the crimes of the Bush administration to go to prison. In fact, as the Associated Press notes, those found guilty could face fines of up to $1 million, 15 years in jail, or both. Kate Martin, director of the Center for National Security Studies, said the measure is broader than any existing law. She said, for example, the language does not specify that the information has to actually be harmful to national security or classified. To quote Kate, a bill that would make it a crime to tell the American people that the president is breaking the law, and a bill that could make it a crime for a newspaper to publish that fact, is how she described this piece of legislation. DeWine is co-sponsoring this bill with Republican Senators Olympia Snowe of Maine, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and former voting machine company CEO Chuck Hagel of Nebraska. It just gets stranger and stranger, doesn't it? And Mike Leavitt, meanwhile, this is a Katrina alert. I probably should have gurgling water playing to introduce this. This is just, you can just imagine it. Mike Leavitt said, the Health and Human Services Secretary, in a speech in Wyoming on Friday, said, when you go to the store and buy three cans of tuna fish, buy a fourth and put it under the bed. When you go to the store and buy some milk, pick up a box of powdered milk, put it under the bed. When you do that for a period of 4 to 6 months, you're going to have a couple of weeks of food, and that's what we're talking about. What are we talking about? He's talking about the bird flu epidemic. As Freudenthal said, Freudenthal is the governor, Governor Dave Freudenthal, said employers should be prepared to lose much of their workforce for weeks at a time. Leavitt said, preparedness saves lives, standing in front of a giant sign with a world map that said, pandemic planning, get informed, get prepared. So just like Katrina, the Bush administration is running around saying, gee, there's something coming. There's a disaster. There's a storm coming.
What are you doing about it, Mr. Bush, Mr. Leavitt?
Oh, well, we've stocked enough Tamiflu to save the lives of all the Republicans in Washington, D.C., a couple hundred thousand doses.
And what else are you doing? Well, not much, I guess.
But we're going around warning people to buy tuna fish. Yeah, just what we needed. That's sort of like when you were running around New Orleans saying, be sure that your SUV has got the tank filled up. It's really going to help a lot of Americans. Not that it's bad advice, but just no. Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Paul?
I'm doing well. First of all, I just wanted to, you brought up the mayoral election in New York.
Right, with Bloomberg.
With Bloomberg.
Was my memory correct on that?
Well, yeah, but there's an interesting little coinkydink that happened.
Uh-huh.
There was a debate going that was going to be held at the Apollo Theater in Harlem.
Right.
That Bloomberg refused to participate in.
Right.
And he was getting a lot of flack from the African-American community.
Right.
For not showing up. Well, the same day that that debate was going to happen was the day that the terror alert was released.
And basically shut down the subways.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Huge coinkydink. Now, as far as the, you know, disagreement between the administration, I don't know what that basis was.
Yeah.
But it was, he was basically a CYA situation with Bloomberg.
Interesting. Well, see, I was in my best tinfoil hat mode here. I was guessing that it might be, you know, kind of testing, one, two, three. It could be an early measurement for the Republicans of whether it's possible for a candidate, a local candidate, and, of course, all congressional and senatorial races ultimately are local, whether a local candidate could run against George Bush in a way that didn't harm Bush and helped the local candidate, because I'm telling you, Bush doesn't want to get impeached, and Karl Rove doesn't want to go to prison. So they will be willing to look like they have egg on their face in order to get Republicans reelected in 2006.
I've been meaning for.
Yeah. So our phones just went flaky on us. Let's see if Jeff in Colorado's on the line. Hey, Jeff, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind?
By the way, just hearing a sponsorship of that bill you just mentioned, it's like. Remember how we used to think Olympia Snow was a moderate? She's
yeah.
Looking really pretty extreme, like Hagel, too.
Well, it may be that it's just badly written, because DeWine is saying, no, we're not trying to put journalists in jail. But, it could be that the Patriot Act was just badly written. It could be that, you know, on and on and on. I mean, it's somehow I suspect that these things don't happen by accident. Not somehow.
Quick point about O'Connor, too. It's pretty really significant that she was one of the Gang of Five who had the illicit Bush v. Gore ruling that put Bush in power to begin with. So her to stand up is significant.
Yeah. And
anyway,
was she appointed by Reagan or by Bush Sr.?
Reagan.
Thank you.
Another thing about the Feingold thing, really some important points. First of all, Russ said that the senators themselves would be violating the oath of office if they did not support this ruling, this censure thing.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah,
he's right.
He said that to C-SPAN yesterday.
Yeah, he's right.
But this brings up four things that we can do. One is we need to contact Russ and support him.
Yes.
Second, we need to contact every senator, especially Bill Frist, and also list a bunch of other reasons why Bush should be impeached besides just this the spying thing, the much worse things. Third, we need to contact the media. And fourth, we need to get 10 friends of ours to do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, all excellent suggestions. And you can call your member of Congress toll-free, 1-888-355-3588. 1-888-355-3588. And russfeingold.com or russfeingold.org will get you to Russ Feingold's website if you want to drop him a note or help out in any way. F-E-I-N-G-O-L-D is the title there. So, Jeff, thanks a lot for the suggestion and the heads up. Well said.
Take care.
Good talking with you. Bill in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hello. I'd like to suggest a strategy that we may be missing out on if we don't take advantage of it about these voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems that a friend of mine who's a consultant, media consultant, says Democrats don't phrase things in ways that strike people where they live.
Right.
And instead of talking about, you know, the what we know is a terrible conflict, having a private enterprise running something that should be a government function, people don't really relate to that. But if you ask them, would they use their automatic transaction machines, automatic teller machines, if those machines had a reputation for making 30% errors, that is something people can relate to.
Yeah.
And then you can ask, you know, would your bank be willing to use a machine or count on a machine that may or may not give them an accurate...
Which brings up the largest question, which is, why is it that Diebold makes bank teller machines that are 100% accurate and voting machines that seem to be inaccurate from time to time? Could it be that they're really not inaccurate from time to time?
Well, you can bring that up. You know, when you make the trail that says, hey, look, Diebold, not only does it make the voting machines, but it also makes these automatic teller machines.
Right. They're the largest, I believe they're the largest supplier of automatic teller machines in the country. That's certainly how they built their reputation. It's the business they've been in for a long time. That and things like dispensing tickets, you know, for ferries and things like that. Diebold has been around in the financial services business for a long time, and they have a good reputation for producing quality stuff that doesn't make mistakes. And so you have to ask yourself if when their machines, quote, make mistakes, did it really make a mistake? Or did it just do exactly what it was supposed to do and look like it made a mistake?
Yep. And that's just, I think that we're missing a bet if we don't hammer on that. I mean, the way the Republicans, you know, I'm going to feel like I'm teaching my mother to suck eggs here by saying, you know, better than most of us that the Republicans put out these talking points for consumption. And there has been some excellent videos that have just shown, you know, montage of talking head after talking head all saying the same things. It works. It may be distasteful, but it works.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that if we don't pick up on this and take issues that really people can just go, what? We can't do that.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of reclaiming of language that needs to happen. I mean, back in the 70s, for example, around abortion, the discussion was, should it be legal to abort non-viable tissue, essentially, or non-viable zygotes, or non-viable trophoblast? What is the early...
Gastrula.
Say that again.
Blastosphere.
Yeah, or for that matter, even a non-viable fetus. Should it be legal to abort a non-viable fetus? And I don't hear, you know, it's people are not using this language. Instead, the language of it's the unborn. It's like wait a second. You know, it's at day one. Is it unborn? It's you know 12 cells, and so, but anyway, I agree with you. I think that we need to be about reclaiming language. It's one of the things Jeffrey Feldman does so well. And a lot of other people, you know, talking about this kind of stuff. And in fact, there's a whole NLP course over on our website on our listen page. If you just listen live down at the bottom of the listen live page, we did this for about 3 months, as I recall, a weekly NLP course on this. Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you, and thanks for listening to us there on Talk 1090 in Seattle. It's 45 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, my friends. 9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for clean elections, among other things. And it's time for a Berlusconi alert! I tell you, well, you remember Silvio Berlusconi, the small-time crook who bought a radio station and then bought a TV station and then bought another radio station and then bought another TV station and then bought a newspaper and then bought a magazine and then bought another radio station and then bought a radio network and then bought a TV network and then bought another radio network and then bought another TV network and then bought another TV network and then bought another magazine and another newspaper, and pretty soon he owned 90% of the media in Italy, and then he ran for prime minister. Or at least he put his party up to run, and guess who won? Yes, Silvio Berlusconi, the Italian prime minister. He then, RAI, the state broadcaster, their equivalent of NPR, or public broadcasting, PBS, was the last network that he didn't own. But as prime minister, he was able to fire the board and stack it with his toadies. So he was invited to be on RAI TV last week. And here's the story, straight off the wire service. Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi stormed off the set of a state TV show after branding the journalist interviewing him as a leftist. The move occurred 2 days before a planned debate between the conservative leader and election challenger Romano Prodi. After failing to get a word in about his government's achievements, Berlusconi accused the program's host, Lucia Annunziata, of being biased toward the left and said the left had occupied state TV, which he runs. By the way, Annunziata resigned in 2004 as the head of the state broadcaster, RAI, alleging that forces loyal to Berlusconi's government were trying to control the broadcaster. She now conducts an interview program for RAI. The three media set networks that Berlusconi owns are RAI's main private TV rivals. So, yes, solo mio.
Steinbrunn da te.
It's all about Silvio. What you can do when you own all the media. It's worked out, how should we say, very well for him. Thank you very much. Our Berlusconi alert for the day. Let us pray it never happens in America. And yet, between Reagan and Clinton, with the end of the antitrust laws that Reagan promulgated, or just basically stopped enforcing them, and with the Telecommunications Act that Bill Clinton signed, it's even possible here. Jeff in South Hero, Vermont. Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling the program.
Thanks for taking my call, and nice to talk to you again.
Well, thank you.
I wanted your opinion on something. Recently, we've had a couple town meetings here, I think it was six or seven, where citizens of Vermont are asking Congressman Sanders to draft impeachment papers. And what do you think of that? And if I could give my own little opinion very quickly.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Well, my take on it is that, number one, there's really two sides of this argument, and I agree with both sides of it, Jeff, and that's the problem. On the one hand, starting some sort of an impeachment process is the only way that any kind of serious investigation of the Bush administration's crimes are going to come to light.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of energy away from other things that are really important and need to be done. And on the other hand, there's no way it's going to go anywhere. I mean, John Conyers has this thing. He's had this thing out for three, 4 months. We had him on this program announcing it when he first introduced it. House resolution, I believe it's 635,
right.
That is, you know, the first step toward impeachment. He, by the way, was also involved in the first step toward the impeachment of Richard Nixon. He was in the House of Representatives back then, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Bernie's, what Bernie has said on this program, I'm not sure what his position is now that these votes have been taken in Vermont, but what he has said is that, you know, let's deal with real issues in front, you know, and real people, and let's not waste our energy on impeachment right now. It's something that could presumably, and I'm not putting words in Bernie's mouth here. I don't want to try and do that.
No, I know, but what you're referring,
you know, something we can deal with after the election. I mean, you know, but right now we need to be talking not about impeachment. We need to be talking about how they're screwing us on trade, and they're screwing us on the environment, and you know, all the ways that the Bush administration, and they're busting the Constitution, and they're you know, snooping in our libraries, and they've got sneak and peek authority to break into our houses, and all these other things that are just absolutely wrong, and we need to be attending to those. And I agree with that too.
Okay.
So
my opinion is this. I mean, I agree with everything you just said, and I've heard Congressman Sanders, and I'm a huge supporter of his, talking on your Brunch with Bernie segment.
Right.
I also think sometimes politics is symbolic, that even if it's a losing battle, and as representative of our state, voted by the people of our state, I guarantee if you did a poll of our state, they would ask our congressman to impeach him.
Well, and maybe.
And, can I just finish here?
But, well, let me just, Jeff, sure. You know, I lived in your state for 10 years. I've only lived here for 11 months.
Okay.
And I'm not sure that that's the case. I mean, in the Northeast Kingdom, for example, although Bernie overwhelmingly got it voted in, that part of the state went for Bush.
Okay. You may be right. I'll give you that. But my point is sometimes politics is symbolic, and even if it's a losing battle, I think you got to fire a shot across the bow to get things out of there.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
You know, I mean, let's take a look at our flag. It's just a mere piece of cloth, but it's symbolic. And for that reason, I kind of think we should do this.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And as I said, it's out there. Conyers' bill is out there. He's got 21 at the last count. It's probably higher than that now. Members of Congress who signed on with him. Whether Bernie will or not, it's up to Bernie.
Sure.
Support him either way, frankly.
I will, too.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Thanks. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. And also, for our listeners who aren't familiar with Vermont politics, you know, it's useful to point out Vermont has a Republican as a governor and a Republican as a lieutenant governor. So yes, granted, in the first election, they both won with less than 50% of the vote because there was a progressive and a Democrat who split the vote. But in the last election, they ran straight up. So, I don't know. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a few updates. Several people have contacted me to say that that little clip in the theme from Vernon Robinson is actually from Leave It to Beaver, not from Mr. Ed. So I didn't need to play Neil Horsley. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the information. And we're still trying to find out what the deal is here with who's endorsing whom and what and how and all that sort of thing with regard to impeachment. And we will bring you up to date on that as we as it comes along. And I believe in another hour or so, probably after we're off the air, I believe it's going to happen around 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, or at least that's what I'm reading in the chat room and hearing in the news reports, that Russ Feingold is going to introduce into the United States Senate a resolution to censure George W. Bush for lying to the American people and violating the Constitution. Absolutely incredible. Hasn't happened. No censure resolution has passed since 1834, when Andrew Jackson was censured. Doug Cunningham is with us from LaborRadio.org, Workers Independent News. Hey, Doug, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on again.
What's up in the labor world this week?
You know, a lot of things are happening, but first I want to highlight something that's kind of obscure in terms of the national profile, but it's important. It's happening in a small town in Illinois, Maridozia, Illinois, where 150 workers are locked out. They've been locked out since June of 2005. They're battling a multinational corporation called the Celanese Corporation. And the tactics employed by Celanese in this small town, this heartland community in America, is just grotesque, and it's reminiscent of like a 19th century sort of a response. They've hired a special security firm, is what they call it, Special Response Corporation. And these ex-military corporate enforcers are out there videotaping workers on the picket lines as they picket. They're also going to their homes, following them into their neighborhoods, videotaping them and their kids.
Isn't stalking illegal, Doug?
Well, you know, I don't know what the law is in that particular state regarding stalking, but it sure would sound like they might have a case here because, I mean, you know, these guards are going far beyond providing security or videotaping what's going on at the corporation site. They're going into the workers' communities. And in one case, they actually videotaped a 12-year-old girl who was outside swimming in the family swimming pool. And in another case, they pointed a camera directly at someone's window, a big picture window.
Now, there's, you know, when you're following somebody, I remember from back in my days when I wrote four novels about private detectives, and there was a private detective, DeWitt Wanamaker, down in Atlanta. He was an old police chief in a small southern town, and we became very good friends, and I followed him around and went on stakeouts with him. And in fact, it was the year of the Olympics in Atlanta, and for the very first time in its 130-some-odd-year history, the Georgia Police Academy was accepting civilians, and so I was one of the first civilians to graduate from a course in the Georgia Police Academy. And all for the, you know, so I could write decent novels, which I was never able to sell, but I wrote four of them. In any case, yeah, well, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And I learned a lot. Being inside the Georgia Police Academy, I'll tell you, I learned a lot about a culture that I had no idea. You know, I knew it existed, but I just had no idea the depth or intensity of it. But anyhow, when you're following people, there's basically, you know, an open cover or, you know, an open way to do it and a closed way to do it. And when you allow it to be known that you are engaging in surveillance, the purpose is really not the surveillance. The purpose is intimidation.
Yeah, that's right.
It sounds to me like what you're saying. I mean, if all of this detail is known, I mean, if these people, if you want to engage in surveillance on somebody without them knowing it, it's not particularly difficult to do, and they will never have a clue. And so it sounds to me like this is really not about surveillance. It sounds to me like this is about intimidation.
It is about intimidation, and one of the things that they've managed to do there, too, is limit the pickets to just a handful of folks at the picket line. So when they show up there, these ex-military security people working for the corporation are there and probably outnumber the six workers that are allowed on the picket lines. And what these workers are fighting for, by the way, this is a multinational corporation, and they've had labor peace at that plant for years and years. Boilermakers is the union involved.
Mm-hmm.
And when they started the negotiations, Celanese had taken over, just had bought out the company. And Celanese immediately demanded like a 30% wage cut cuts in pensions, health benefits, et cetera, and wouldn't seriously negotiate any other position, and then just locked out the workers, hired replacements at about half the salary. And the union is fighting a battle. It's also going to the NLRB. It has community support in that small community. They have a website I'd like to mention. It's Boilermakers484.org. They have a solidarity fund at that website. You can go if you feel like supporting what they're involved in, the struggle that they're involved in. You can certainly do that at that website.
Boilermakers484.org.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a solidarity fund at that site. You know, this is middle America. This is small town America. This is a community that for decades has had labor peace at this plant. And these are 150 courageous families still trying to fight and battle this giant multinational corporation. And like I said, the tactics that are employed by the company are just outrageous.
Is Celanese a U.S.-based company, or have they reincorporated in the Bahamas or something so they don't have to pay taxes, or are they a foreign-owned company?
I don't know exactly what the ownership of the company is. I know they're active in the United States. They're active in Asia. They're active in other parts of the world as well. And this particular plant makes adhesives that are used in cardboard boxes and things like that. And I know the company is highly profitable. It doesn't make huge billions of dollars, but I think it has a profit in the neighborhood of $140 million a year.
Not too
shabby. So it's not a question of profitability.
And that's with the current labor agreements.
Right, that's right. And this is another thing that goes to the heart of today's workforce and what working families are facing. You know, corporations have this attitude that their profits ought to continually go up and up and up and up, while workers' wages and pension benefits and health care benefits go down and down and down and down. Right. And that's just not the social contract that is the American way.
Well, it's also not pragmatic, because at a certain point, the basis of the profits of the corporations is the ability of the workers to buy their products.
Well, absolutely. And obviously, economists would argue that that's what helps drive. That's one of the most important driving forces in the economy, discretionary income in the pockets of working families who then go out and spend it at various stores, merchants, et cetera. So it's really self-destructive in the end for the entire economy and for the entire country. But what it is it's a narrow self-interest of the company, because their shareholders, their profits go up, and their CEOs get higher salary packages, et cetera, if they're successful in these gambits.
It sure seems to me, Doug, like we're seeing a repeat of the 1920s.
It's a very intense conflict certainly underway, and it's happening nationwide across all sorts of industries. And workers are battling back as best they can. Organized labor unions are battling back on behalf of working families as best they can. But, you know, we saw something, Tom, in the port scandal that's very instructive about labor. When the people rise up in unison, no matter what you happen to think about how that happened with the port scandal, they rise up in unison and they get the job done. If it's something that the American people want...
But the other piece of that, though, Doug, is that caught the imagination, or whatever you want to call it, of the national television media. And if it had not been for Lou Dobbs, Republican Lou Dobbs, originally promoting that, I mean, he's the guy who broke it into the mainstream media.
Right.
Had it not been for that, then I don't think that America would have stood up. I think, you know, this is, I mean, that's, as you well know, I mean, the Dubai Ports World deal is one of hundreds of those kinds of acquisitions, not just of ports. I mean, the Communist Chinese bought the port in Long Beach a couple of years ago, You had, you know, like Congressman Peter DeFazio fighting that, but never really got picked up in the national media.
You know what it does, Tom, I think, and I think you're right about that. The national media mainstream attention that it got certainly helped fuel the uprising over it, and the bipartisan nature of it also. But you know, when this happens, what it does is it reminds Americans, I think, that the people are really powerful. I mean, if they do stand up with a passion and a fury politically, and they unite on an issue and they persist, they can get changes made.
So Doug Cunningham with LaborRadio.org. Doug, are you seeing the people standing up in ways that are going... We have about a minute left. In ways that are going to be meaningful across the United States here? Or are these battles like they were in the early 20s, where, you know, people were just getting crushed and it took the Great Depression to bring about changes?
Well, it's a lopsided battlefield, and labor is fighting a defensive battle in many ways, but it's also, there's a lot of energy out there in the labor movement and with grassroots workers, and they are fighting back, and they're fighting back with an intense spirit, and they're thinking strategically, Tom, to come up with plans to do it, and they're committing resources to do it. So, you know, it's an uphill battle. But I do think there's hope, and I do think there's a possibility of igniting a wider, broad-stream, mainstream movement that could help fuel the power of the labor movement to get some changes made that American working families need.
Yeah, it's just that the labor media, I mean, you guys are pretty much it for labor media. And I remember when I was a kid, newspapers used to have labor sections in them.
Well, yeah, and, you know, and I'm
just
more and
don't
more,
anymore.
And I'm more and more convinced the more I cover what's happening with working families and labor and corporations, the more I cover it, the more I'm convinced that we need a working family revolution in America where people stand up and say, no, we're not going to accept this anymore. We're just simply not going to take it anymore, just like they'd stood up to the port deal. We're not going to take that anymore. Port deal didn't happen. If they stand up for working families in the same way, big changes can happen there, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's time for a Howard Beale moment.
Absolutely.
That's what we need. We need that Howard Beale moment. We need the people to get out there and open the window and the whole thing. Doug Cunningham with Labor Radio, Workers Independent News, laborradio.org, the website. Doug, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Open it and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends, helping you win the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. And sure enough, time for a piggy's alert. It's 291 billion pounds, Dr. Calculus.
Well, let me see. That would be 145 million and a half tons of the
refuse.
Yeah, refuse per every day. And by the year, let me figure, over 53 million tons of
manure?
Manure, yeah. By comparison, the pyramid of the Pharaoh Cheops weighs about 690 million tons, which means that every four and three, you've got a pile of this
excrement.
Yeah.
Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around.
Yes, indeed. The piggies, they always have clean white shirts. Halliburton has been paid more than $160 million for Hurricane Katrina reconstruction and mortuary services. Inspector General's report undertaken at the request of Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon has raised some serious questions. The DOD is investigating, the Department of Defense is investigating whether Halliburton subsidiary, this is from the United Press International, Pamela Hess, has overcharged the Navy for hurricane reconstruction. I want to know why KBR, this is a review of KBR's bills to the Navy by the Department of Defense's Inspector General for work last year, restoring Navy facilities in Pensacola, Florida, damaged by Hurricane Ivan, suggests KBR may be charging the Navy too much in labor. I want to know why KBR is getting any contracts in the U.S. government since it is not a U.S. company. Kellogg Brown and Root was reincorporated offshore so they would not have to pay taxes on the profits that they earn to the United States. They wouldn't have to pay U.S. income taxes. Like its contract in Iraq, KBR's Navy construction contract is a cost-plus award arrangement. This means the company earns more in profit if its costs are higher because its profit is figured as a percentage of the contract's cost. The March 3rd Inspector General's report says the rates paid to some KBR contractors for labor were significantly higher than the prevailing Bureau of Labor Statistics rates for the area impacted by the hurricane. Halliburton, are they at it again? We'll find out. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com and click the live chat link. And be sure you have the most recent version of Java, by the way. It's a Java applet. You can get that at java.com if you need it, if for some reason it doesn't immediately work for you. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling in.
Good afternoon, Tom. Thought I'd just kind of report in. I just got off the phone with some Bingaman staffers. He's my senator.
Mm-hmm.
I called in. I wanted to know what his stance was on the censure motion.
Mm-hmm.
And she started telling me about that he was supporting the investigation law that they're not going to do.
Now, Bingaman is a Democrat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very moderate. He's like ranks right, kind of right in the middle.
Yeah.
He sold out on the filibuster. He sold out on the bankruptcy. whatever. So anyway, we chatted, and she said, so you want me to ask Senator Bingaman to support what is it? And I told her Rush Feingold's censure motion.
Mm-hmm.
And
Russ
I said, no, I'm not asking him to support it. I'm telling him to. And I said, not only that, by 6 o'clock tomorrow night, I want to report back if he's going to, because we've got a Sandoval County Democratic Club meeting, and I want to report to the club what he's going to do. Now, Tom, the only reason I'm reporting that story is...
I'm not asking him, I'm telling him. That's great. Well, he works for you. That's great.
Up until the middle of December of 2003, I was a registered Republican. I'm the vice president of the county club. I'm a precinct chairman. I'm going to the state convention this week because I got fed up, I changed, and we started taking it over.
Now, Roy, do you mean when you started listening to this program, you were a Republican?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I was registered Republican.
Do I owe an apology to the Republican Party here or something?
No, not one bit. Not one bit, because actually it was Howard Dean that did.
Okay, good.
I had to switch registration so I could vote for him in the caucus.
Yeah.
But we just agitated. We have a lady now that's running for state rep because for the last three election cycles, we had a Republican run unopposed.
Yeah.
And we said, this ain't going to happen no more.
Right.
Even if she gets beat, we're going to go out there and we're going to fight.
That's right.
We're going to fight and we're going to fight. And the only the reason I'm calling is I just want people to get motivated, make sure that they're educated, and then get out there and agitate.
Because it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
It is fun. It is fun. And it feels like you're in control. I don't know how much I'm in control, but I know if I wasn't doing this, I'd go nuts.
Yeah, there you go.
So let's take the anger, let's get out there, work, bust our butt, and take our country back. In fact, there's a song about that I'm sure you'll play shortly.
There you go. Okay, good on you, Roy.
Let's have fun.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Roy. Good to hear from you. Keep up the great work. That's amazing. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Watch out for me, woman, and don't mind nobody else. Watch out for me, woman, and don't mind nobody else.
Truth and common sense in broadcasting. Tom Hartman here on the True People's Radio. Welcome back to our program, my friends. Coming up on 25 minutes before the hour. And I should just start doing this every Monday. We just need to, you know, to kind of recalibrate where we are, what we're all about, what's going on. Just, you know, Tony Stampley and the Honky Talkers for Truth.
And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like you've been treating my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese. You blew the budget and you lost Iraq. So I'm taking my car.
And not just from Bush, from the whole Republican bunch of them.
We had a bundle and a treasury drawer more than there had ever been before. But every day we're drowning deeper in debt. Maybe 4 years should be all you get.
Well.
And you gave tax breaks to the millionaires. And you tried to make the working man pay. But you can't tax a man when his job's not there. Now look at where we are today. Hey, I'm taking my car.
Yeah, we've all got to follow Roy's example. Get out there, get involved, get active, my friends.
I've been watching you and I don't lie. Now you've been treating my stars and stripes. Got too many fancy friends for me.
the Saudis treat you like you're royalty. You blew the budget and you bossed Iran. Now I'm taking my country back. Now I can understand why you were hot, 'cause Bin Laden never did get caught. So you said we had Saddam to blame, tried to tell us it was all the same. But now the years roll by and our kids keep dying. You don't even have a plan to bring them home. And those WMD you promised on TV, admit it, you figured it wrong. So I'm taking my
yes, indeed, my friends. We got to get out there. We got to get active. It's you and me, one at a time. Each one of us getting involved.
Now you don't know my name, but you know who I am. I'm your everyday work hard, play hard, raise kids and pray hard, common man. And Lord knows I love this land.
This is so great.
You've been treating my stars and stars. You say unite, but you divide us more.
You say unite, but you divide us more. I saw how you're telling them on the Senate floor.
I'm taking my country back. I've got my family and my church and flag. I'm taking my.
There you go, my friends. Tony Stampley, the Honky Tonk, Honky Tonkers for Truth, taking my country back. Yes, indeed. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And Armin in Bradenton, Florida, on the line. Hey, Armin.
Hey, I have something here that I think would really look unique and interesting on Air America's website, and I think I'm willing to share this just to show how corrupt the insurance companies, the Republican Party, Aetna, health insurance, in my opinion, are. And what it is in 2003, I had a heart attack, and I went in the hospital, and I found out after I got in the hospital, we called up to engage our claim, that Aetna converted my policy from the standard 80-20 that takes care of most things significantly, over $20,000, and they converted it to a maximum $5,000 payout. That's everything with no medical lab, just strictly hospital and doctors. And in Florida, that's a few days.
Armin, I got to tell you, you know.
Let me finish, though.
You're not the only guy who's got this problem.
I know, but here, I got the statement. I call this the mark of the beast, Republican Bush Aetna healthcare reform. And
but it's not just Aetna, Armin. I mean, this is happening all across the insurance industry. The credit card industry as well. I just got a thing in the mail the other day that said, you know, new terms on your credit card. And you read this thing, and it's like, you know, 22 pages of legalese, and you read all this stuff, and holy cow, they just changed the top limit on the interest payments.
Here's the significant part about this one that's very fitting to all those, quote, Christians out there that fall for this sham weasel in the White House. Okay, they want me to pay, it's 666. It's the number 666 is what they want me to pay every quarter now.
Isn't that ironic?
They want to charge it 666, you know, the mark of the beast.
Right, oh yeah.
And they want me to pay close to $2,700 for insurance that's only worth $5,000. That is a racket. And not just that, it's even worse. Agents, we've tried to upgrade this insurance, and agents in Florida say, oh, you got to keep that. You can't get rid of that unless you can't upgrade it by law.
Because your pre-existing condition.
Now I got pre-existing conditions, and you know what? I'll move out of the country before I pay $12,000 a year for health insurance.
Yeah. Well, that's the tragedy of it, Armin. I absolutely understand what you're saying, Armin, and I have to say, not as severely as you, but I have been there with my health insurance company. And it ain't good. I mean, we have a system in this country that is so broken, It is sick. It is so broken. It's a crime, and it's, as I said, it's not just Aetna, and it's happening right across the board. You've got an entire industry out there. In fact, tomorrow we're going to get into some detail on basically the extraordinary economic ripoff of America and Americans. KJ in Camas, Washington. Hey, KJ, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Last week you talked about the guy in South Dakota who wrote this this new anti-abortion law, and there was a loophole for a good religious girl who was saving herself for marriage, that someone like that had been and raped and brutalized. Well, as long as she's devout and was saving herself, then sure, we could see our way clear to getting her an abortion. So my question I throw out there, then, does that include someone who's the Vestal Virgin of a pagan cult?
Excuse me. Why? Are you one?
No, I guess.
I mean,
well, the reason I bring this up is a lot of talk about faith-based and religion, but you know, half the time they don't really specify a religion.
Yeah, well, see, I mean, here's the clip, by the way. So for those people who don't know what you're talking about, this guy was being interviewed. It's Senator Bill Napoli. He's a Republican. He's one of the Republican state senators in South Dakota who passed this anti-abortion law. And he's talking about, he says, the law does have an escape hatch in it. It says if the life of the mother is at risk, then she can get an abortion. And so they said, well, what does that mean? And so here's his example. It's, let me pot it up here.
Savage. The girl was a virgin.
Let's just start over again here at the beginning. There we go.
A real life description to me would be a rape victim. Brutally raped, savaged. The girl was a virgin. She was religious. She planned on saving her virginity until she was married. She was brutalized and raped, sodomized, as bad as you can possibly make it, and is impregnated. I mean, that girl could be so messed up physically and psychologically that carrying that child could very well threaten her life.
So, therefore, perhaps if you're the Vestal Virgin of a pagan cult and it's going to mess you up so badly your life is at risk, you would qualify for an abortion in South Dakota. I somehow doubt it, but...
Yeah. Well, I'd like to say one thing about celibacy. And, you know, I'm not
overrated.
A Christian. I'm a pagan. But the thing about celibacy, you find this in all religions, and celibacy is not necessarily tied up with being morally good.
Mm-hmm.
What it is saving your energy or redirecting your energy. Sexual energy and spiritual energy are often considered very closely connected.
Sure.
So sometimes you want
raising prana and all that. Yeah, interesting. Years ago, I had a friend who was convinced that, an ex-Catholic, who was convinced that the whole reason why the early Catholic Church had introduced celibacy to the only people who were allowed to be literate, you know, during the Middle Ages, it was a crime to be literate unless you were a priest or in the priesthood, and those people didn't produce offspring, and that he was convinced that it was a conspiracy by people who actually hated the people who were occupying, whose lands were being occupied by the Catholics, to dumb them down, because the most intelligent people, you know, the people who were capable of becoming, you know, well educated, were the ones who went into the priesthood and therefore had no offspring. And that this was a huge conspiracy over multiple generations, over, you know, 50, 100 generations, to create, a widespread, huge swaths across Europe of illiterate or dumb or incapable of becoming literate Catholics. I don't know. It's a conspiracy theory that I never quite subscribed to, but it does raise some interesting questions, because historically other religions, you know, have rewarded the smartest guy in town. Judaism, the rabbi is expected to have a lot of kids. You know, you want the smartest people. Well, you know, we don't want to get into eugenics. 45 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Indeed, my friends, together, we're going to pull together America. You know, right and left, Republicans and Democrats and independents and Greens and conservatives and liberals and progressives and a whole bunch of us, we are all really interested in the same thing at the end of the day. We all want our kids to do well. We all want the air to be clean. We all want the water to be safe. We all want decent food. I mean, yeah, there's a few predators among us, a few people who are willing to put their own personal profit above all those other things, but they're really few. I mean, they have a disproportionate amount of apparently money and power, certainly with this administration. Their voice may seem disproportionately louder, but I would guess that probably we're talking maybe a total of 30, 40, 50,000 people out of 300 million in the United States who are those kinds of sociopaths who would put, you know, who would intentionally pollute the water or who would do those kinds of costs. Well, you know, an extra 300 people are going to die, but this corporation is going to make an extra $70,000, so it's or $70 million, so why buy? You know, they're few and far between. Really, most Americans are good, decent people. Allison in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Allison, welcome to the program.
Hey, I wanted to tell you I'm a dog walker in Seattle. I listen to you every morning while I'm walking dogs.
Oh, great.
But I was home today, and I was two-stepping through my living room, which I used to do when I lived in Texas, making my sign that says, Bush broke the law, illegal wiretapping violates Fourth Amendment, National Security Act, FISA, stand up, support center, call Patty Murray, call Maria Cantwell, together we can hold Bush accountable.
That's a brilliant sign.
And you know what? I would give absolutely anything if, as I was driving through the streets of Seattle, I would see signs on the back of people's car, your own sign.
Yeah.
And, you know, people go, oh, no, that'll ruin my paint. If you go to the hardware store and buy Glue Gun, it will take the tape off of your paint. And
well, you know, what we did was when Cindy Sheehan was doing her thing, we had a people were emailing these things around, and basically it was just a Word document that you print on a piece of colored paper, you know, you run it through the printer. Mr. President, talk to Cindy, or Bush, tell her why her son died. I mean, I've got two of these on my wall right now I'm looking at that I just read to you. And we just put one of those on the back, you know, just taped it into the back window of our car.
Hey, one more thing.
So it worked fine.
I really love you. But I really love you. When you said this morning that Russ Feingold is your guy, he is my guy.
Yeah.
He is the Straight Talk Express.
He really
is. He is absolutely wonderful. When you ask him a question, he answers it.
I know. I know. Well, it's, you know, he's from Wisconsin. He's got a fairly safe, I don't know how safe, actually. It's hard to say. But in any case, he's a fearless guy. I'd say he's inherited the mantle of Paul Wellstone, you know, for lack of a better phrase.
You got it.
Allison, thanks for the call.
Bye.
Thanks for the call. Good talking to you.
Bye.
Appreciate it. Alan in Effingham, Illinois. Hey, Alan.
Hey, I joined a movie club called Ironweed.
Mm-hmm.
And the first movie I got was called Soul Train.
Is that the S-E-O-U-L, the as in the city, South Korea?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about people in North Korea trying to escape to South Korea,
mm-hmm.
and they have to go through China. And if China catches them, China will send them back to North Korea where they'll be tortured and possibly even killed.
Right.
So that is a really moving movie, and everybody should watch it. And also send letters and join Amnesty International and try to help these people and do something about this.
Yeah, the North Korean dictatorship, along with that of Burma, Myanmar, and I've worked on the border, the Thai border with Burma, is one of the. These are probably two of the most repressive dictatorships on earth. It's really, really grim, and it doesn't mean that the United States should declare war on them, but they're terrible dictatorships.
So. Yeah. Also, there's a website for this movie. It's called Soul Train.
S-E-O-U-L Train. Yeah.
Yeah, soultrain.com.
.com, great.
And
Alan?
Also, there's a Republican senator who really promotes this movie.
Interesting. Well, see, for the Republicans, it's a twofer. They can get you outraged about North Korea, which is a legitimate outrage, and then they can say, oh, and by the way, maybe we should have a war with them, then their contractor buddies can make more money. I think, you know, there's a whole lot of better ways to deal with North Korea than declaring war on them, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah,
Alan,
like
thanks for...
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. I got to move along. Sherry in Seattle. Hey, Sherry.
Oh, well, all right. Excuse me. I think I'm going to have to call back tomorrow. I've got something in my throat.
Oh, that's okay. Do you want me to put you on hold and come back to you?
Okay.
I'll do that. We'll go to Gary in Pittsburgh, and we'll see how we do with time here because we only have 1 minute left. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Gary.
Respectfully, I got to disagree on the last two things.
Okay.
First of all, Russ Feingold, fine man, great leader, but he's not electable, in my opinion. Secondly,
I disagree.
Okay, well, we disagree, whatever.
You know, if you think it's the, like,
we need to run.
If you think it's like the Kucinich factor, you know, I agree with
you.
No,
I do not think it's the Kucinich factor. I do not, in my humble opinion, I do not.
What makes Russ Feingold unelectable?
No, well, let me put it to you this way. For this next election cycle, Russ Feingold would not win the presidency, in my opinion.
I think he would.
Okay, we disagree.
I think Russ Feingold is to the Democrats what John McCain is to the Republicans. And the party is as afraid, the Democratic Party is as afraid of Russ Feingold as the Republican Party is afraid of John McCain.
They're going to run McCain. Would you agree with that?
I would put probably about a 70% probability on that. Frist is going to be fighting it, but.
We need to run a major, major man with credentials. And you know who I feel about that.
Secondly, are you talking about Al Gore or John Edwards?
About Al Gore Obama ticket.
Yeah,
win the presidency.
Gore Obama or Gore Feingold, I think, could do it.
And secondly, a lot of wealthy Americans are voting the wrong way. George Bush, the imperial presidency, strong but wrong.
There you go. Well said, Gary. And Sherry, I'm sorry, we're out of time, but we'll get to you tomorrow. Give us a call back. Coming up for the next Tom Hartman program tomorrow, conservative Robert Garmong says the liberals are brainless on the Dubai port deal and globalization. Neelam Sharma has made an impact on communities dominated by urban decay and crime. She'll tell us how, that and more in your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.